AD70.net, where soon means soon, near means near, and at hand, well, it sure doesn't mean 2,000 years. Good afternoon. This is Kingdom Christianity with John Noe and me, Mike Loomis, hanging out here with you on AD70.net. John, how are you doing this afternoon?
Well, I'm doing fine, Michael. Ready to go for another exciting hour of Kingdom Christianity. That's what we call it, right?
Well, giddy up. Let me tell you, my friend, that song I think is very appropriate. I want to walk like you, talk like you. I want to be just like you. And who are we talking about when we say that?
Our model. Jesus.
Absolutely.
In fact, he told his disciples, he said, as the Father has sent me, I send you. And he told them, he said, teach them to obey everything I've commanded you to do. Man, if that isn't a model, if that isn't relevant for today, Michael, I don't know what is.
Yeah, you know, we are living in a world that is going through so much flux right now. It is just amazing to see what's happening here in the United States. The political movements that are taking place, the more grassroots movements, the people that are getting elected to office. I mean, consider the state of Alaska right now. Very interesting to just see how Americans are kind of stepping back and saying, you know what? Yeah, you know, when he said it was time for change when it came to a new president, he didn't mean the 7 cents in your pocket because they're going to tax that too.
Well, he means all the stuff in your wallet and your credit cards as well. but Michael, I mean, this world is screwed up, and the sad part about it is that so is the church, and that's why this next topic that we're getting into in Kingdom Christianity, the greater works of Jesus, is going to be so important. And we kicked it off a little bit last week, or started to get involved with it a little bit last week, and mentioned a few things about it. But, hey, before we get into that again, sure, back on the greater works, you and I both received a response from a listener. Actually, it was a criticism. You're familiar with what I'm talking about, I think.
Right.
From a lady who was objecting to my testimony that I shared, 2 weeks ago when I shared that, or 1 week ago?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, okay. And I want to thank you for sending it to me. And as I've offered several times on this program, you know, I'd be more than happy to respond to comments, criticisms, and so forth, provided they could be done in a civil manner. And this one certainly was that. She was very nice. And I thought she brought up some valid objection points and some good issues. So I'd like to respond to that again before we get back into the greater works, Michael. And it's not too long. It's a couple paragraphs here. So what I thought I'd do is I'd just read it and then go back and make some comments to that. Would that be workable from your standpoint?
Absolutely.
All right. So this lady writes, and this was September 3rd when she sent it in. She said, I find this testimony of John's troubling. Is the word of knowledge and prophesying which Paul speaks about telling people what they already know from a source that doesn't? Because this is common among those who encounter, quote, angels of light, end quote. It constitutes a sign and a wonder which false prophets are able to do. Certainly, she says, it was supernatural. But whether it was the holy God speaking from heaven through this man, giving this revelation to John of things he already knew or believed, is questionable. And the Kundali type of power, now I had to look that up.
It's actually Kundalini.
Kundalini, yes. And it's used in yoga, and they define it to mean a corporal energy or an unconscious, intuitive, or libidinal force, whatever that is. Anyway, that's what she says. So it says the Kundalini or Kundalini type of power, like a fire, which traveled up and down the spine of his wife also sounds occultic. Where are such descriptions from healings found in Scripture? John was told he had received special revelation of the Scriptures, and then he was told to receive this anointing and not resist it. What makes, she asked, this testimony any different than those we hear from the Word faith preachers? Is preterism to have its false prophets too? And then the last short paragraph, she says, discernment and true revelation comes to us from the Scriptures. And that discernment is not so that we might better believe things which already appeal to our own beliefs about ourselves. Now, nicely said. I mean, obviously a criticism.
Right.
You have to agree to that. And so just let me respond to some of the points that she brings up in this, Michael. And you feel free to jump in here, obviously, anywhere you feel like you want to add something here.
Okay.
First of all, she said, I find this testimony of John's troubling. Hey, so did John. So did Zinni. And I think I alluded to that,
right.
When I shared with this. Because we were concerned. She says, talks about what source does it come from. Well, we were concerned about that, too. Obviously, and whether this was occultic or spiritism or whatever it was, we didn't really know for sure. And I tell you, we didn't share that with anybody for years. I mean, we just kept it to ourselves for that reason, because that is a very valid concern. We are told to test the Scriptures, to test the spirits of Scripture. And this certainly was one of those cases, I can assure you of that. She goes on to say, it certainly was supernatural. Well, I would agree with that. Now, where it comes from, and that's the question. And then she says, discernment, true revelation comes to us from the Scriptures. Well, that's where I would ask a question. Yes, that is certainly true. But is that the only place, Michael, we can hear from God, is from the Scriptures nowadays?
I would even go so far as to go back to a point. Now, do you mind if I take a little 3-minute side trail here?
It's your show.
No, it's your show, but I'm trying. I just want to try.
It's your station.
There you go. It's all God's. We're just tools in this toolbox.
There you go.
But
go for it.
I can go back to a date in 2002, in the last week of April. My grandmother had passed away. I had just been married for just a few months. My wife was working full-time at Forest Lawn here in Cyprus, and the responsibility had fallen upon me to cook Easter dinner. And I had cooked Easter dinner for my grandmother and my mom and dad and some other family members. And the following week, my grandmother passed away. And there had been something kind of stirring in my life. Didn't know exactly what it was, but I had been, just walking closer with the Lord, just spending a lot more time in the Word and fellowship and worship. And, after my grandmother passed away, I mean, obviously there was an emotional time. It was an emotional thing that was going on. But my grandmother knew that her time for the last 2 years of her life was kind of, she was just living day to day. And so we were prepared for this. We had talked about it. It was more of a glorious thing than a sad thing. But I remember, after the funeral, I was at my aunt's house, and this gentleman that had officiated the service, if you call it that, or he had done the services, a family friend for many, many years, and something possessed me to ask him. I don't want to use that word possessed. Something had given me the unction to ask him. I'm like, Chris, how do you know if God is calling you into ministry? And he just looks up at me, and he gives me this deadpan look, and he goes, try and do anything else. And I was like, oh, man. He goes, there are days I wish I could just go drive a truck or do something different. He goes, but if God is putting a call on your life, then there's nothing you can do about it. He goes, I'm going to pray for you that God make himself manifest in your life and either confirm or deny this, what you're going through. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, anyways, 2 days later, I remember going to lunch with my wife at a Greek restaurant, and we were driving home. We were driving south on the 605 freeway, about 10 miles from home. And I don't know what happened to me, John. The only way I can describe it is either it was the outpouring of the Holy Spirit or it was God putting that call on my life. And I remember just driving down the freeway, and all of a sudden, just this flood of emotion came over me. It felt like warm honey being poured all over me. And I just started weeping. And my wife was in the passenger seat. And she says, Mike, what's going on? And I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know. I said, but I know I need to study. I know I need to get prepared. It's like God is putting a call on my life. I don't know what it is, but I know I need to study. I know I need to get ready. I know I need to get prepared. And that's all I knew. That was the only piece of information that I knew. Was that God talking to me through the Holy Spirit? I don't know. Was it an emotional experience that was a response from the loss of my grandmother? I don't know. But what I do know is from that day forward, my life changed. I began studying more. I started going to school, just following the leading of the Lord. And for me, my life was changed from that point forward. Shortly thereafter, I went to work for Calvary Chapel, went to their school of ministry, graduated from there. And now I'm looking at what we're doing today here with this Preterist Broadcast Network, and I can see that all these things had lined up. The first thing I did, one of the first things I did after that Sunday, that fateful Sunday, something told me.
You know, Michael, that is, the Bible talks about judge everything by its fruit.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, let me just kind of wrap up this story. Where I was at, though, is I knew I needed to get ready. I knew I needed to get prepared. And something told me, you need to study speech. You know, get yourself ready to get out and speak before a lot of people. And so I went and I enrolled over at the college nearby here and studied. And, my major was speech communications. And then within months after starting that, I got the job working at the radio station. I'm like going, okay, now I'm talking to a lot of people here in a Christian radio station. And it just, it kept on going from there. I prepared. I went to the School of Ministry, got my degree in pastoral ministry. And, I have spent a lot of time in the last 5 years speaking to a lot of people over the airwaves, over the internet. And, I'm looking back now and I'm saying, okay, that was something where God communicated to me in such a way that I knew that I needed to pursue this path. And here we are today. So
now I would say, Michael, I would just echo that with my testimony that I shared, that that's exactly what's happened to me. But still, I mean, and by the way, let me just finish up this one comment that I want to address something else on this. Her statement that discernment and true revelation comes to us from Scripture. Now, she doesn't say only, but that's what she's implying here. And certainly I want to affirm that. But again, God has spoken to people in the Bible in so many different ways. And what is prayer all about, for example? Obviously, you can pray through the Scriptures, but you can pray, through up in the sky by lifting your eyes to the hills and so forth, as Jesus did. And praying is not just talking to God. In fact, most of my prayer is I don't even open my mouth. I just pray, Lord, may my thoughts be your thoughts and my ways your ways. And then I shut up and listen. And, I don't even have a Bible in immediate proximity. Usually I'm out jogging, in a state forest or something like that, which is one of my favorite places. And my problem, biggest problem is I start getting so many things poured into my mind that come somehow show up, and I'm so far away from a piece of paper in my car that I parked that I got to think of some mental gymnastics to, hook them into my memory so I can remember them to write them down when I get back to my car. But what about dreams and visions? And what about the still small voice? And what about God speaking audibly to people back? There's so many other ways besides the Scriptures. Who are we, a little finite specks of dust on this huge globe that's spinning through space at astronomical speeds, to say, well, only the Scriptures. That's all it is today. It's only the Scriptures. Well, that's a form, in my opinion, of cessationist theology. You have any thoughts on that?
You know what? I know there are a lot of people that would poo-poo the idea of empirically being able to know anything. But yet it does seem like when you look at the Scriptures, we are told to be able to look and taste and come and see and be able to use our senses to be able to understand who God is through his creation. through observation.
And not only who God is, but to make decisions in our life and plan directions. You know, let me give another side of this, or another insight into this, Michael. Are you familiar that police departments all over the world often call on clairvoyance to help them solve some of the most baffling cases? Are you aware of that?
I'm very aware.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
And are you also aware that they have been able to solve some these baffling cases many times, not all the time, but many times because of what the clairvoyant has heard or seen that enabled them to put the pieces together and find the guilty party? Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am. But I mean, I'm not sure exactly where you're going with this. But, you know, even Nostradamus was right a number of times.
Well, here's where I'm going with this. How does that happen? Or how can that happen?
Well, let me run this past you. From my experience with my wife in the years that I've spent with her, there are times when I can predict what she's going to do, but that's based on experience.
That's intuition, what we call intuition, hunches, you know, that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Let me express to you this. Let me just fly this idea up the flagpole for a moment. Some people believe there is what's called a library of information in the air that surrounds us.
Now, is that air or air?
I'm talking about both, but especially air. That there is a mystical pool of information about that contains information about every event that has ever happened or maybe even will ever happen, but at least has ever happened in the history of the universe and every thought that has been thought. Now, if you think that is far out, just think for a minute. In this air that's surrounding you and I,
mm-hmm.
you and your studio and me and mine, it's filled with information.
Right.
I mean, we in the 21st century know this now.
Right.
Because we know that there are waves of information going through this space where it doesn't look like there's anything there. There's all sorts of stuff there. All we have to do is have the proper receiver in order to be able to pick it up, right?
Right. There are TV waves going through my head right now. There are radio waves going through my head.
Yes.
The problem is I didn't get the right fillings in my teeth.
But we know that this is true, right? That there is a library of information flowing through the air.
Right.
And then, you know, throw the internet in on that too while we're at it. Might as well. And other things like that. Well, there is more than that, I'm going to suggest to you, flowing through the air.
Okay.
And that is how clairvoyance works. Now, obviously, there are frauds. Obviously, there are, you know, people who are deceived or whatever. But I'm going to suggest that there's a guy, according, I did a little research on this a while ago, maybe for a future book someday. There was a guy called, I don't know if he's still alive or not, Reichshun. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
I don't know where it is. I think it's in England, but I'm not sure about that. But he has been called, he's a clairvoyant, and he's called on by police departments, you know, to come in. And what he does is he brings along a wire hoop to help him tune in to this library mm-hmm. of information, a wire hoop. And I guess he holds it in his hands, and he takes this wire hoop, and he goes to the scene of the crime. That's his methodology. And with the help of this tool, he is able to recreate the last few minutes of the victim's life in his mind or in his mind's eye or somehow. And he says he hears, he sees, he feels, he tastes, and he smells everything as the victim experienced it. And if the death was caused by strangulation, then red marks appear on his neck. And if the death was caused by shooting, then spots appear on somewhere on his body. And he is able to begin then to describe the events of the crime that took place and in part leads to the police so that they can identify the killer. And he has, and they have notarized affidavits accompanying every case that he has helped them to solve. And he hasn't solved every one of them. I mean, he's not 100%, but he has performed quite a track record, I guess. And this guy performs also in nightclubs. And he says he hits about 80% accuracy. That's what his quote. I'm looking at an interview they did for him. And it's not bad, he feels, because he relates very specific information, not somebody in here has a headache or a backache or like that. For example, he correctly diagnosed in one of his audiences a lady having a low blood count and a history of heart disease. In another, a lady is told that her father had hemorrhoids. And then he tells a third woman this, you have no children. And she says, yes, I have. And he asks, how many? And she replies, one. And he says, but he is not yours. He didn't come out of your uterus. And she says, no, he's adopted. And Reichshoon is right again. And next he spots another lady and says, do you now write something? And she says, well, sort of. And he says, do you make a thesis for a master's degree? And she says, no. And he says, I'll come off of it. I can see it, madam. Why do you deny it? Anyway, it's called telepathy. He can, that telepathy is defined as the extrasensory experience of another person's mental state or thoughts. Clairvoyance is something similar, but it's a knowledge of the past or the present without any sensory aid, like a second sight or something like that. The amazing Creston, have you ever heard of him?
I believe so.
He was in Indianapolis, and this article was in the paper there back in 1991. And he was appearing at a nightclub here, and the Indianapolis Star was there and reported this, that he left the show early that night. He said, I was reading the thoughts of one girl in the audience, and I stopped the show. The audience didn't quite realize it. But the maitre d' came backstage and said, Creston, is there something wrong? You ended the show so early. And Creston, he says, I said, yes, the girl whose thoughts I was last reading, would you bring her backstage and get a priest? She plans to commit suicide. 19 years later, Creston was performing at a benefit in Rahway, New Jersey, and a woman came up to him and asked if he remembered her. It was that woman. Anyway, I just bring those up. And by the way, there's other kind of stuff that goes on, like channeling, which is some weird stuff. But they come up, some of these channelers come up with such precise information about the past and about other lives and things like that that they could not possibly have known. So how does this happen? Well, again, I want to go back and just say that we live in an information universe and with a library, in the air. And also in that universe are what the Bible calls familiar spirits. And it talks about these. The Bible talks about these in Deuteronomy 18, verses 10 through 11, where it says, it had the admonishment against getting involved with these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It says, there shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that uses divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. I think it's somebody that tries to deal with the dead or something like that.
Right.
There's such a thing as in the Bible as not only familiar spirits, but deceiving spirits, lying spirits, deceitful spirits, spirits of error, all sorts of evil spirits, dumb spirits, unclean spirits. But familiar spirits are somewhat interesting in that these spirits are said to be to know things that have happened in the past and can read people's minds and their thoughts and their plans and their thinking about things. And this is a spirit realm reality. Now, no, this is not in God's this is not part of God's community. This is part of the other kingdom,
right,
the kingdom of darkness. But these things operate. And I want to suggest that in many cases, you know, what we've been talking about here is that's how these people get this knowledge, that they are able to open themselves up to that receiver of information, those familiar spirits or deceiving spirits, whatever, and they convey that knowledge out of the air or out of the minds of other people, whether that's clairvoyance or telepathy, and that is the mechanism by which a lot of that works. Now, is that far out, Michael?
You know, I've never heard someone bring this up, so I'm just trying to soak it all in and process it.
Now, something interesting. In Indiana, one of the most strange and dramatic cases of what's called precognition. Now, precognition is a little bit different. Precognition has to do with acquisition of knowledge about what's going to happen in the future. That's a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And people aren't nearly as accurate with what is going to happen in the future, a la Gene Dixon, for example. Is that her name? Isn't that her name?
Right.
Yeah, Gene Dixon. They're not nearly as accurate as things that have happened in the past, which is an interesting dynamic. But one of the things that happened was on a winter morning on December 7th, 1939, the residents of Owensboro, Indiana, which is a small little town in southern Indiana here, found a bizarre message painted in large letters on the pavement in front of the school. And it read, "Remember Pearl Harbor." Now, this was December 7th, 1939. Nobody at that time had any idea what it meant. 2 years later, on that exact date, the Japanese launched their infamous attack on Pearl Harbor. How could this have happened? Well, let me suggest that it was the operation of familiar spirits operating through some human instrument who opened him or herself up to that. And the familiar spirits, how could they know that? Because they knew the thoughts of the Japanese leaders as they were thinking about and planning this attack. Now, the reason, if that's true, if this mechanism in the realm of the spirit, which is, again, it's the kingdom of darkness, not the kingdom of God, if that works and they know these things, why is their accuracy so much better, you know, for things that have happened in the past or happening in the present than their accuracy for what's going to happen in the future? And the reason for that, I'm going to suggest, is that they don't know the future. All they can know is what has happened in the past, what people have thought or currently thinking. They cannot know what's going to happen in the future, but they can speculate. And they have, you know the saying that knowledge is power?
Right.
They know what key people are thinking and planning. So they can speculate. But and they can maybe be pretty accurate and hit something every now and then. Like, you know, like the assassination of President Kennedy and of Dr. Martin Luther King and so forth, like, and other things that have been supposedly precognitated. But their accuracy isn't as good because they don't know the future. They can only speculate based on the knowledge they have, which is a lot more knowledge than we have. But their knowledge of the past and the present can be extremely accurate, and that accounts for that dynamic if this is still true. Now, channeling is really interesting.
Now, John, can I ask you a kind of a question here? I want to read something that I always thought was kind of strange, call it coincidental or whatever, and that is the comparison between the assassinations of Lincoln and Kennedy, okay? Abraham Lincoln was elected to Congress in 1846. John F. Kennedy elected to Congress in 1946. Lincoln was elected president in 1860. Kennedy was elected the president in 1960. The names Lincoln and Kennedy each contain seven letters. Both were particularly concerned with civil rights. Both wives lost their children while living in the White House. Both presidents were shot on a Friday. Both were shot in the head. Lincoln's secretary named Kennedy warned him not to go to the theater. Kennedy's secretary, Lincoln, warned him not to go to Dallas. Both were assassinated by Southerners. Both were succeeded by Southerners. Both successors were named Johnson. Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Lincoln, was born in 1808. Lyndon Johnson, who succeeded Kennedy, was born in 1908. John Wilkes Booth was born in 1839. Lee Harvey Oswald was born in 1939. Both assassins were known by their three names. Both names are comprised of 15 letters. Booth ran from the theater and was caught in a warehouse. Oswald ran from a warehouse and was caught in a theater. Booth and Oswald were assassinated before their trials. Now, is this all just strange coincidence? Is this all a part of what you're talking about with this information? I mean, you know, it does seem that there are a lot of things that it seems like there's way too many coincidences for it to be simply, you know what I mean?
What you're doing is doing a correlation or a comparative between the two, but one was not linked with the other. So that would not be clairvoyance, or that would not be precognition, right?
Okay,
so you're just showing similarities.
Well, they were very, very
what was
strange.
That show? Stranger Than Fiction. Remember that one?
Right.
So what I'm talking about, Michael, is information in the air, the library in the air that can be tapped, not only by radio receivers and television receivers and internet receivers and antennas and so forth like that, but can also be tapped through familiar spirits by human beings. Not of God. In fact, God warns us against that. Now, the question is, all right, if that kind of stuff exists over here in one realm of the spirit realm, does God have a counterpart? Or maybe that's the counterpart, and does God have a genuine? Maybe that's the best way to do it. Well, Jesus Christ was clairvoyant, for example. He told the woman at the well that he had never met about her past five marriages, and the man that she was currently living with was not her husband. I mean, he had insider information, right? How does that work? And there's other examples we can give, of words of knowledge, what's called, as we've gone through those things in 1 Corinthians 12, words of knowledge and words of wisdom and discerning of spirits. How does that work? I mean, is God's kingdom lesser than Satan's kingdom in this regard?
No.
I would hope not. Well, anyway, I think those are causes for pause. And by the way, I can't explain this. I'm just raising the issue. So I go back to the critique of the lady who sent me, who said she finds it troubling, and she says, was it certainly it was supernatural, but whether it was the Holy God speaking from heaven through this man, giving this revelation to John of things he already knew or believable is questionable. I agree. I agree. Just because something supernatural like this, or like what, Michael, what you shared, with the honey and the bees and all that kind of stuff, you don't want to read too much into that. You want to test that thing out, not just once, but continually. And I think the proof of the pudding will be in the fruit that it produces. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And again, it is, regarding these things like, forthtelling prophecy or even, like you were saying with Jesus, with the woman at the well. I mean, the question might be, okay, so what is the test as to whether these are genuine? And, we know that a prophet in the Bible, 100% accuracy is the test, not 99, 100%. And so, these things all do need to be tested.
Right. Well, let me give you another example. In 1958, this lady was crowned Miss America. And by the way, this also was appeared in an article in the Indianapolis Star, this account. But at that time, nobody knew about the nightmare in her life, and she was too terrified to tell anybody about it. And then she fell in love with the young man that she had met in church and almost married several times, but at the age 24, she married another man, only to be divorced 3 months later. And her pastor, having observed all this, took her aside one day and began to question her. And nothing significant was uncovered until the Lord gave him a word of knowledge. Now, that's one of the nine or so gifts that Paul mentions in 1 Corinthians 12. And that word of knowledge was three words, just three words. And when he said these three words, and the three words are father, nightmare, bedroom, she broke down in heaving sobs and told him the awful truth. And until that moment, the article goes on to say, no one had ever known that Marilyn Vandebuer was a victim of sexual child abuse. Her father frequently raped her at night in her bedroom. It was like a nightmare in her memory that she could not voice, that she had repressed. And miraculously, the hidden cause behind her dysfunctional behavior had been revealed by one of the gifts of the Spirit operating through a caring and obedient pastor. And after that, a recovery ministry began. Marilyn, the article goes on to say, eventually married the young man from church whom she had originally fallen in love with. And it says she frequently shares this story openly as she travels around and speaks.
Hmm.
Now, how about that for fruit? And there's all sorts of there's many more stories, good, bad, and otherwise. You know, that are things that happen to people that cannot be explained from, you know, in normal, rational, natural kind of ways, that it can only be described as supernatural, whether they're of the kingdom of darkness or whether they're of the kingdom of God. And again, I just go back and ask our listeners, and you too, Michael. You know, does Satan's kingdom have more mechanisms like this than God's kingdom has? Well, not according to the Apostle Paul. According to the Apostle Paul, the power tools, as I call them, the spiritual gifts or whatever, those are the genuine, those are the real. But Satan has, and I'm going to use the word counterparts. I'm not going to use the word counterfeit because counterfeit has a nuance of being not real. Right. But these things that are operating, you know, and we just touched on a few of them here in Satan's kingdom, they're real. They're real, and they can provide real knowledge. Unfortunately, the motivation of those spirits is to destroy that person and to discredit God and so forth, you know, those kind of things.
Right.
But I just ask, you know, in the realm of the spirit, based upon what we see in the Bible, based upon what we see happening today, not only in churches, but also in these nightclubs and, you know, in police departments and so forth like that, who are bringing in these clairvoyants to help them solve crimes. I mean, something is going on that the preterist view does not explain.
Well, now let me ask you this, John. Let's kind of take a step back and look at the fulfilled view of the book of Revelation, the last few chapters, and kind of address this. Okay, you have this picture that's being painted in the book of Revelation, this false prophet, beast, you know, all these evil things coming to an end, going to the lake of fire. Okay, there's a great white throne judgment based on and according to works. And then you have this New Jerusalem, this New Jerusalem, and coming down out of heaven. And yet you still have outside the gates of that city liars and dogs and sorcerers and whoever loves and practices a lie. There's right. Still something going on, some evil. But my question is, and I've always kind of looked at and understood the passages in the writings of John regarding the Antichrist as, you know, being the antithesis to the Spirit of Christ, you know, the people that were indwelled with the Spirit of God. What was the antithesis of that? That was those who were in opposition to them. They were possessed by their father, the devil. Okay. And so my question is, okay, so if after this great white throne judgment, okay, there are still these people outside the city.
Which they are.
What's going on with them? Is there something, some spirit that possesses them? And if so, what is that spirit? Because we do see a certain sense and a finality to the evil going to that lake of fire. You know,
that's an assumption.
That is okay.
That is an assumption.
Well, educate.
When you talk about being cast into the lake of fire, Satan being cast, the demons, those whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, the assumption of many preterists that I've run into is that, well, okay, that is an end. I.e., when I say end, I don't mean a goal. You know, the Greek word for end is telos. Telos means not just a termination, but also means a destination. And the assumption is, well, all right, if they're cast in the lake of fire, they're all burned up. They no longer exist, because obviously fire, you know, the way we think of physical fire, if you put a piece of paper in physical fire, it burns it up, it blows away, right?
Right.
Or they're at least no longer involved in human activity in any way, shape, or fashion. Well, listen, let's just take Satan, since he's the chief one among them, all right? Satan has always been bound. As far back as the book of Job, for example, Michael, which some people feel is the oldest book in the Old Testament, Satan was bound in what he could do. I mean, that meaning he was limited, right?
Right.
He could only do so much with Job. Now, he was given a pretty long leash back then, because he wreaked havoc on Job and his life and his family and his possessions. And at the cross, Satan was further bound by Jesus. And here in Revelation, we have Satan being cast at the end of the millennial period, which has a terminus. The 1,000 years has a terminus. That's the only thing I know in the book of Revelation that has a terminus. And it ends. And after the end, then Satan is cast into the lake of fire. Well, his being cast into the lake of fire is part of those things that were shortly to take place. Therefore, you have to have a terminus on the 1,000 years. So all full preterists agree that that has happened, that that took place back then and there. What we disagree on is, what does this mean? Again, the assumption is made, if he's cast in the lake of fire, he's non-existent. He doesn't even exist anymore, or he's at least inoperative, and he's not involved in human affairs. That does not necessitate that at all. That is assumptive. And I want to suggest that the lake of fire is not hell. In fact, you won't find any, if you do a study on hell, and the words that are used, the four biblical words that are used that are mistranslated in some versions as hell, you will have a hard time supporting a afterlife place of eternal conscious punishment called hell.
Right.
The final destination of all that is in the lake of fire, not in hell. Now, the question is, what is the lake of fire? Well, if it's not hell, because it doesn't say it's hell, and by the way, Gehenna isn't cast into the lake of fire.
Right.
Hades is cast into the lake of fire, but Gehenna isn't. And Gehenna is the main word in the New Testament used by Jesus that is mistranslated as hell. But it's only Hades that's translated into the lake of fire. And Hades was not a place of eternal conscious punishment. It was temporal. And there was no punishment going. There was two sides of that. One side, there was no punishment. And one side, there was some punishment.
Right. Now,
but that goes back to Sheol. Because Hades and Sheol is the Old Testament Hebrew, and in the Old Testament Hebrew, Sheol did not have any moral distinctions or any punishment going on. Okay, what was your question?
Well, now my question is, the term Gehenna that's used by Jesus, okay,
yes.
That's the name of the trash dump outside of Jerusalem.
Correct.
Okay, him talking to those people.
There's nothing otherworldly about that.
Right. In other words, when he's pointing to that thing that where the cankerworm is always eating, where the fire and brimstone is, where the smoke is always rising up, he said, guys, if you don't change your ways, this is where you're going to end up. And quite literally,
their physical bodies did.
I know. Josephus records it. They went to hell.
Right.
They went to hell.
No, they went to Gehenna.
No, King James Version, they went to hell. But you know what I'm saying. They went to Gehenna. They went to the trash dump. The trash dump that is today a garden.
Yes.
It is a garden. If you've ever wanted to know what hell looks like in the King James vernacular, go look at a picture of the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom. It's a beautiful garden today.
Yes. Yes, I have a picture of it myself. All right, now, so what I'm saying is, the Satan and the devils and all this kind of stuff, and Hades. By the way, Hades had a righteous compartment. It was cast in the lake of fire, too. What is the lake of fire? I'm going to suggest that the lake of fire is none other than God. If you'll do a study, word study, on fire, you'll find that our God is a consuming fire.
I was just going to say that.
And that is both New Testament and Old Testament. You will find that a river of fire flows out of the throne. I think that's in Ezekiel somewhere, if I remember right.
Hmm.
You'll find fire used many, 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 many times throughout the Bible talking about God's judgment.
Now, John, there are some people that would look at, after this life, this idea of everyone just going back into that collective of God.
That's another issue.
Okay. Well,
that's another issue, and we don't have time to get involved in that one. But the point I want to make to answer your question is I'm going to suggest that I can make a stronger case for the lake of fire being as Satan and Hades and the demons and the people whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life and all that kind of stuff being cast into God, which is a further binding that does not necessitate annihilation, nor does it necessitate that they would be inactive or inoperative in being able to interact with the, in human lives and in human society. Because Satan has always been bound, being bound means he's still able to operate, but he's on a leash. He can only go so far. He is limited. So being cast in the lake of fire does not necessitate non-existence.
Now let me ask you this, because I guess what I'm trying to wrap my head around is, so then ultimately, I mean, it almost sounds like the final fate of everyone is more of a comprehensive or universal one if it's all going back into God?
Well, there's also another place called heaven.
Right.
And that's not the lake of fire. That is spoken of differently. So, Michael, what we've been talking about in this show, whether we're talking about clairvoyance or familiar spirits or lake of fire or whatever, we're talking about things we can't see.
Hmm.
We're talking about the invisible realm. You know, so I can't prove any of this to you.
Right.
So all we can do is look at the various indicators that we have. And I just want to suggest to you and our listeners out there that there very possibly is a whole lot of stuff that we don't know about, let alone understand, on how all this world, both the material realm and the spirit realm, how all this stuff works. For example, what about this great cloud of witnesses that we're surrounded with, that Hebrews talks about, in that same realm, right, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where is that? That's in Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Well, what is that? What cloud of witnesses are we talking about here that we're surrounded with? I'm going to suggest that is the same arena as the library in the air that we were talking about before. And what else is in that library that's in the air, that all around us, in addition to familiar spirits and deceiving spirits and, you know, all that kind of stuff? I want to suggest that if you go down to verse 22, we will see what's in that cloud of witnesses that surrounds us in the realm of the spirit, and that is this: but you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, since you brought it up, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels are in that cloud in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, which is in that cloud, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, he's in that cloud, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, they're in that cloud, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks better, a better word than the blood of Abel. That's what's in the cloud all around us. In addition to familiar spirits and lying spirits and deceiving spirits, this realm of the spirit is a two-sided coin. And there's all sorts of things going on there, good, bad, and otherwise, that produce real results.
So what you're suggesting is that it's very possible that even those of us who hold to this message or understanding of fulfillment is that we may have overstepped our boundaries of what was fulfilled and what did come to an end?
Well, I would. I thought you were going to say something else. I would suggest that, yes. Yes. I mean, how do we, you know, that's one of the biggest disagreements we have, in preterist circles, is the nature of fulfillment, and especially the nature of post-AD 70 reality. We pretty much agree, I think, Michael, at least my experience is, on the time for all this, right?
Right.
Our areas of disagreement is what was the nature of fulfillment, like resurrection, for example. I mean, there's so many differing opinions on that, it's unbelievable. And, more importantly, I think, is what's the nature of post-AD 70 reality? These spirit realm dynamics, mechanisms, instrumentalities, realities, sub-realities, whatever you want to call them, that we've just been touching the tip of the iceberg on today, for example. I mean, how much of that exists? And how do we know? Or how much of that doesn't exist? And same question, how do we know? Because we see these things in operation. And, as you pointed out, we can make a case scripturally for either a cessation of some or all these things or a continuance. I suggest that the scriptural case for continuance is much stronger and superior to that I've seen, at least to date, for a cessation. And then if we start ceasing things, where do we stop ceasing things?
That is a good
question. By what hermeneutic?
Right. I think that's a very fair and valid question of, you know, how far is too far? Because, you know, that is one.
And who decides that?
Whoever has the loudest voice in the bullhorn. But you know what? I mean, even myself, as, you know, I have moved from being a premillennial dispensationalist to a preterist, you know, as I came to a better understanding of the scriptures, a fuller understanding of the scriptures, it was amazing how many things that I thought were talking about the afterlife, for example, that, okay, those aren't. But again, the question is, it's like, how close do you get to the edge before you fall off? You know, I do agree. There have been a couple of people over the last 5 or 6 years that, and actually more over the last 10 or 15 years that I've heard of, that have come to this understanding of fulfillment that were promoters of it, that were teachers and speakers that have just kind of faded away, that have gone off into a more agnostic perspective, and that just disappeared off the face of the earth. And now I guess my question would be is, you know, is there a point where you can step over that line and go too far regarding fulfillment? You say there is. And I know for myself personally, I'm still exploring all these things. I haven't come to a position where I feel that I'm settled, you know, aside from the AD 70 thing and a handful of other things. But, mm-hmm. You know, I'm still open. I'm 38 years old. You know, I'm not, you know, compared to my kids, I'm an old dog. But, you know, I'm still exploring and I'm still trying to absorb all this information and just trying to categorize it, put it on the shelf, keep it there for easy and quick reference. But, again, I guess the question is, you know, how far is too far? You know, what exactly is the latter half of Revelation chapter 20 talking about? Was it talking about that temporal judgment that was coming upon that old covenant system, which was coming to its end?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the deceiver? Is this accuser of the brethren that we see throughout the Old Testament, that we see, you know, in the early ministry of Jesus being spoken of? Is that individual, is that entity, is that something that is still ongoing? Is that something, somebody, is that individual something that went to the lake of fire? You know, is the Satan that's being spoken of in the latter, you know, books of the Bible, you know, Satan is prowling around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. You know, is that talking, was that talking about, you know, those people that were persecuting him? And I've read some very good arguments that, you know, the devil that was being spoken of was those people that were persecuting the saints. Now, I'm not willing to go all the way and say that Satan was just Adam, or there never actually was a spiritual individual named or referred to as Satan. But, you know, I think that there are certain times where we, just because we see the term Satan, we automatically think of the devil. Well, we know Peter wasn't a devil, but yet Jesus called him Satan.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you know what? My goal is to bring all this information together, put it out there, and, you know, just like when I'm getting done cooking spaghetti, you take one of the noodles out, you throw it against the wall. If it sticks, you're done. If it doesn't, put it back in the cooker, because we need to you know, take this a little bit further.
Well, Michael, you brought up a whole bunch of topics. Each could be a show in and of itself.
Right.
Let me just go back to 1 Corinthians 12, verse 1, where Paul says, "Now about spiritual gifts, brothers, I do not want you to be ignorant." Let me just stop right there. Ignorant is not a very flattering word. But I want to suggest that all of us, myself included, and you've already admitted as much, are ignorant about a lot of these things that happen in the realm of the spirit, whether they're operating through Satan's side and his agencies, or whether they're operating or not operating or have ceased, you know, on God's side. You know, one of the things that would really bother me is if God ceased his, but he let Satan's keep on operating. That wouldn't be too fair, would it?
Well, you know what? We are living in an empirical realm. We are living in time each second, one after the other. You can't go back to the last one. You can't go to the next one. And, you know, I will say, and I must admit, that we can posit ideas. We can make theories. We can try and figure these things out. And I think we are, you know, with this information superhighway that we are all on now, whether we want to be or not, we are able to understand things better, more concisely. But I just, the eternal realm is something, the heavenly realm is something that I don't think we're ever going to be able to grasp. We can understand certain principles and aspects of it, but I think we just do need to be careful that we do not box up and categorize and seal up everything and say, we're done. We've come to an understanding and this is it. And you know, put the term confession of faith on the end of it. You know, again, test everything. What isn't good, get rid of it. What is, keep it.
There you go. Well, I didn't realize we were going to take up the whole show talking about this lady's criticism of my testimony, but I'd like to just publicly, again, I don't even know what her name is, but I'd just like to thank her, if she's listening, for sending this in.
Her name is
again,
Robin.
Excuse me?
Her name is Robin.
Robin. I like to, Robin, I want to thank you for sending us in. I want to thank you for doing it in a civil manner, and I want to thank you for bringing up some good issues and some good points that obviously resulted in our conversation, Michael, for this hour. And next week, Michael, I think we need to get back on the greater works. That's what we started last time, and you know, there is an awful lot we need to talk about in terms of the greater works of Jesus. I mean, how arrogant that we could think that we could do greater works than Jesus, but those were his words, not my words. And we need to begin to delve into that and explore it and see what all we can come up with there, and see if we can't explain this a lot better than some of the commentators who, like Barnes Notes, I think I shared that with you, said interpreters have been at a loss in what way to understand this. So there's a lot of things that we don't understand. In fact, the more that I learn, the more that I know I don't know. And, you know, it's an amazing fact of science, too, Michael, that the more we've discovered about the physical creation, whether it's the macro, you know, the sky, the atmosphere, the planets, the universe, or the micro, you know, through electron microscopes and the cell and, you know, the inner workings of subatomic particles and all this kind of stuff, the more we've discovered about that, the more we realize we don't know about how it works. So the more we learn, the more we know we don't know.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to the day that we all find out that we are living in a matrix. We've only existed for 10 minutes, that God has implanted all of our memories and our knowledge, and that he all created it with age. See, that's my backhanded poke at the young earth creationists. Sorry, guys.
I know. All right. Well, listen, good being with you again. Next week, we'll jump right into the greater works and see if we can't figure out really what Jesus was talking about.
Alrighty, my friend. We will see you back here next Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of Kingdom Christianity. God bless, John.
You too.
You are tuned to listener-supported AD70.net, Christian radio from a slightly different point of view. We're putting sanity back into Christianity one day at a time. We're helping to wipe the proverbial futurist egg off the face of Christianity. If you'd like to help us take this message of fulfillment to the uttermost parts of the earth, you can do that by going to AD70.net/support. You can make a one-time donation of any size, or you can become a regular subscriber for as little as $5 a month. If you'd like to get a copy of this or any of our previous live broadcasts, simply go to thepodcast.org. Broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is AD70.net.